Boy Alma Real, launching my new CD 333. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Good morning, Montreal. Welcome to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a good show for you today with two podcasts and one pre-recorded interview. The interview is with the band Wake Island. Philippe and Nedim join us to rock the house down with Lebanese rock music. The first podcast is called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, and it's about the question, why do songs get stuck in your head? The second podcast is a rabble podcast from Labor Radio and Solidarity News about how the world needs a corporate minimum tax to help fund the billions of dollars needed to get us through the pandemic. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
clutching trophies of childhood triumphs, like you'd want to save the good old days. Oh, no, no, no. You've got to go. On the open ocean awaits for me, baby. I cannot even try to describe all the glory you will surely find. On the open ocean awaits for you, my dear. You've got to find your own way there. When you can, you'll find me, yeah, we'll find. A single bead of sweat forms on your head, rolls down.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is underway, but not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Composed of Philip Manasse and Nedim Maghzal, two Lebanese immigrants who met in Montreal in the early 2000s, Wake Island is inspired by their Middle Eastern roots, which they combine with avant-garde techno beats and a pop aesthetic reminiscent of the 80s and 90s. With us today, we have Wake Island. Hi, Philip and Nedim, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Hi, thank you.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you got together in Wake Island.
I'm Philippe. Yeah, we both met in Montreal years and years ago, around 2003 or 2004. And we started playing music together around 2006 in various bands. So we started up in rock. And then around 2016, we started this project of being a duo and playing electronic music.
Your latest album is Born to Leave. What's the story behind this album?
This album is we're telling the story of our immigration story from Lebanon to Canada. We both moved here in the early 2000s, and it's been a wild ride, actually. And looking back at all this last 15, 20 years of our lives, we get a better understanding today of what it is that we went through, from having to leave your home to adapting to a new culture, to facing all sorts of cultural issues and racism and inadequacy and imposter syndrome and all these feelings that we thought were unique to us. We realized after a while that they're quite universal and that they could apply to so many situations, whether you're talking about immigrations or any sort of alienation in society, really. So this record is kind of an attempt at universalizing our experience dealing with this, and while at the same time being very personal about it and telling the story from our very personal perspective.
As well, I just like to add to this that it's also, as we moved here, we are people, the Lebanese people, we've seen basically waves and waves and waves of young people and people in general having to leave the country because of problems, tensions rising. And particularly in the last 5 years, we've seen a huge wave of departures. This album, in a way, is also kind of also something that we want to tell the story of our people, and we want this record to be for them as well. As like, the thing is, we're not alone going through this experience. It really tells the story of the unfortunate story of our people, especially in the last couple of years with the economic crisis, with the collapse of the country, the explosion last year. We've seen so many young people fleeing out of the country. A lot of them are coming to Canada. So in a way, it's an attempt at saying, hey, we've been through this and you're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
May we listen to some of your music?
Of course.
Yes, absolutely.
This is Born to Leave on the Wednesday Morning After.
Moment.
What are you doing to promote Lebanese culture in North America?
We're actually trying to do as much as we can. So first of all, just existing as Lebanese artists is not something you see every day on the music scene. So for us, that's one of the reasons also that we are persistent in our work as musicians, is that we feel a certain responsibility to exist and to take a place in that scene. On the other hand, we try through our music to address all the issues that relate to our region, to our country. Of course, more recently, with like everything that's been happening with the Lebanese revolution, the explosion, we try to be an extension of our people, because the Lebanese people are it's a big diaspora and it doesn't stop at the borders. So we do a lot of work participating in groups and some activism, cultural activities. And another thing we do also is we started a party, music party, to like invite people to like discover more about Lebanese music and Arabic music in general. And that's very important to us too, because there's so many stereotypes running around about what Arabic music is, and we just want to show the diversity of it. Nadj, do you want to add something?
I think we're going to talk about the party a little bit more, but I just wanted to add that another fun thing we started doing, we've always wanted to do this for a while, is share a little bit of our culture through things that we love and value, like, for instance, cooking. So on our Instagram account, we started sharing recipes that we cook a lot, both Phil and I. And so it's kind of like a way of telling people, hey, you can do this at home, and kind of discover our culture through a culinary angle. And that's another fun thing we're doing.
So tell us about this party called Leilit.
So Leilit, as Phil was saying, is kind of like one of the most important ways we're trying to reconnect with our roots as not only Lebanese people, but people who come from the Middle East at large. We're very interested in all the cultures and countries that speak Arabic, where the Arabic culture is present. So North African countries, Levantine countries, and all that. And it's a party we started in New York in end of 2018. So it's pretty fresh. And started it with a friend of ours called Safi Shamoun, who's a Syrian immigrant, moved to the US, and he lives in New York. We started it there because I was living there at the time. And also there was a very strong desire for people from all those different communities to kind of have a space where they could come together, meet, celebrate their culture, especially under the political situation of the Trump era. Like, there was like really right in the middle of all this stuff, all this racism was rising, minorities were feeling like really suffocated. So we needed all of us, like there was a lot of queer dance spaces, a lot of like even Arabic queer spaces. There's, you know, you go in New York, you go clubbing and you see a lot of celebration going on in dance form, in getting together, in this togetherness feeling. And Leilit was one of the various parties that was that did that. And so we started it on one hand to have a space for ourselves and for our people, and also people interested in our culture. So it's a very open and inclusive space. But also for us, from a more personal point of view, we felt like after immigrating, after spending the majority of our first years as immigrants, kind of assimilating to Canadian and American culture, learning all this cultural baggage to communicate with people and make friends, we felt like we left our own culture a bit on the, like in the back. We kind of threw it away for a while. Also, it was not kind of, when we moved here in the early 2000s, it was very weird time to be a proud Arab, you know, after 9/11. So Leilit was a way for us to reconnect with our culture and learn a lot about the music coming from all those countries and the diasporas of all those countries. So artists like us who have left and are creating music now in different countries all around the world. So it's for us, it's been a huge learning curve. And so we present those tracks, we play this music, we DJ, and we invite guest DJs. And last year, just before the pandemic hit, the party got so successful that we were actually started booking artists from all over the place. We wanted to bring Palestinian DJs, rappers, and so on. So to have a platform for them, a place where they can actually come. And in New York, we also started that in Montreal also in 2019. We had four parties here in Montreal. And so that was the objective, was to basically you know, have a space for our culture. And unfortunately, COVID kind of stopped all of our activities. But we hope to continue doing this once it's safe again to do so.
You recently released a video called Nouvelle Vague. How would you describe this video?
That video we did ourselves. It's a DIY video. And the song was originally written a little bit about what we were just talking about, the community aspect of our work and the importance of community in taking your place in society. And then as we re-listened to it recently, it really started to sound like very much like what we were feeling during the pandemic. And what the song really is about is how do you face change, really? So when it was written, it was about the change we felt coming to Canada. But it was a bit more than that. Like listening to it during the pandemic made us feel like, again, there's a massive change ahead of us because of the pandemic. It's uncertainty that's really dominating our lives now. And for once, everyone is feeling it in society. And we felt like the song was speaking to us and would speak to people a lot. So we decided to make that video about that and about the year 2020 and how all the stuff that affected us. There's so much that happened. It felt like an avalanche of revelations and worries and excitement. And there's so much that happened. And we wanted the video to be that. So if you watch the video, you'll see it really does feel like an avalanche of events and people just hitting us in the face. And that's a bit of the concept of that video. And in the end, the point we're trying to make is that we sometimes have to disconnect it a little bit from the noise and look at it as a whole rather than be affected by every single event that happens. And when you look at things from a distance a little bit, you can at the same time notice what's wrong, but also keep the hope up. And that's always been our message, and that the video is no different.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
This is Nouvelle Vague on CKUT.
Thank you.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
The easiest way to buy our music and support us would be Bandcamp, of course. Otherwise, the album will be available on all the major streamings and the minor streamings platforms. So, of course, your Spotify's, Apple's and everything. And the vinyl should be coming out later this year, and we'll definitely make an announcement. So we also encourage people to follow us on social media. We're mostly active on Instagram, so that's at Wake Island Music over there. And there you go.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Philippe Manessa and Nedim Magzal speaking about their band Wake Island and their recent releases. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Have you ever heard a tiny snippet of a tune or an annoying lyric and not been able to stop humming it for the next 10 years of your life? Well, this week on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, we look at why songs get stuck in our head.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast made to be listened to in the shower, but really you can listen to it wherever the hell you want.
Have you ever wondered why we have leap years?
Or why dogs sniff each other's bums?
Or why coffee makes us poo?
If you've ever wondered the answers to those questions or many more, well, you've come to the right place.
We've answered those questions and we're about to answer one more.
So step into the cubicle as we look at why songs get stuck in your head.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Well, this question comes from Shannon Amon, and to her, I'm excited to find out the answer to this one, because like songs get stuck in my head so often, because I'm like, usually it's music that I hate. Like, I'll be in a taxi and I'll hear something, and yeah, I just want to know if there's any way to prevent it, because I'm not an angry person. Like, I tear up when I say nice things to Taz, and like I get goosebumps at the thought of, like, you know, hanging out with dogs. But like, holy shit, when like songs get stuck in Taz, like there's one song, right? Sorry, I know I'm rambling and that we're starting the episode, but Taz, there's one song that, you know what I'm talking about. I can't even say the lyrics and it's already stuck in my head. It's already stuck in my head. I've been thinking about this. There's no, oh my God. Oh, do you know what song I'm talking about?
I know. And now, Marcus, it's in my head.
No.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, it's honestly the most annoying song in the world. It's going to be in my head for the next, okay. Let's count to three, sing the chorus and see if we're talking about the same song. Okay?
All right.
One, two, three.
Life is a no, 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 summer. No more of that.
I am not a number. I even wear my sunglasses in the rain.
No, that's
sunglasses in the rain.
But you know what? Like, do you know what else is stuck in my head recently? Like, it's just not a good. Like, you know that song? Like, oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho.
What a terrible song!
Like, honestly. Anyway, so, like, terrible.
Like, somebody? It's like somebody did a search on the most basic quotes of all time and then wrote a song.
Do you know what? It's like, I absolutely love when girls or guys put quotes with photos on Instagram and stuff like that. Like, you know, oh, Jenny puts up a picture of her with a cocktail and captions something like, our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. It's like, Jenny, chill out. Like, you're drinking a mojito. You're not climbing Kilimanjaro.
Or even better, when a picture is accompanied with a quote from an inspirational person, like, fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. We get that your biceps look good in this picture, Ben. No need to bring Muhammad Ali into it.
Or like, do you know, when people are like, they put up a picture with someone being like, I love my partner in crime. It's like, you're going to a bar together. You're not robbing a bank. You're not committing tax fraud. Anyway, listen, we've gone completely off the point. That song is still in my head. And
I wear my sunglasses in the rain.
Like, I want to know why. Like, what is it about those songs, good songs or bad songs, that just drill into your skull and stay there?
Okay, so why are sticky songs, earworms as they're known, so hard to dislodge? And what kinds of songs are most likely to get stuck in our brains anyway?
Inform us, oh wise one.
Okay, a few disparate studies hold at least some answers, and it has a lot to do with the actual song.
So some songs actually have a greater statistical chance of getting stuck in our head, right?
Exactly. So it kind of comes down to the song as opposed to just music getting stuck in your head. So as I said, songs that get stuck in your head are called earworms. And common earworms seem to share some features, researchers have found. They're songs you've heard a lot, which may be why current radio hits tend to dominate the top 10 earworm list. They often have repetitive notes or unexpected intervals in timing. They also have distinctive rhythms and pitch patterns.
Do you know what? That makes sense. Because in pop music, there's so much repetition, and that's what gets stuck in your head. Like, think about it. So much of, like, na na na, come on, or like, I've got cheap thrills, or like anything like that. It's something for people to sing along to, and that just gets, but it's never the whole song. It's always just a line or the chorus, you know, like just one tiny bit of it that just nails in your head.
Exactly, exactly. So according to Kelly Jacobowski, a postdoctoral researcher in the Department of Music at Durham University in the UK, the overall conclusion is that the song has to be quite simple in order to be recalled spontaneously, but also have something a little bit unique that makes the brain want to essentially rehearse it over and over.
So it is your brain that keeps the song playing over and over again involuntarily.
Correct. It is an involuntary brain function. And an actual fact, scientists sometimes refer to earworms as involuntary musical imagery, or IMI.
So your brain is like involuntarily imagining the song being played over and over and over and over and over and over.
And over. And it's a lot more common than you think.
Oh, wow.
A 2012 study published in the journal Psychology of Music found that 90% of Finnish internet users reported getting a song stuck in their head at least once a week. The more musical the person, the more earworms they were likely to experience. The study found, and that result has been backed up by other surveys. For example, one 2006 paper in the Journal of Consciousness Studies detailed the experience of a pianist and a composer who had almost constant IMI, which is involuntary musical imagery, 24/7 earworms are perpetual music tracks.
Hang on, so like, just to be clear, their mind was never clear, just like constant, this poor pianist just had stuff stuck in their heads over, like, oh, holy shit, like that's horrendous.
That's horrendous. So the pianist in question wrote, I find almost nothing pleasurable about having a PMT. A PMT is a perpetual music track. Rather, it is quite a distraction most of the time. The kind of thing I wish I could turn off. The pianist's distaste for earworms extended even to songs that he found most emotive, he wrote, because mainly the most affecting music was also a distraction from real life.
That's really interesting. I always sort of thought it was the songs you found most annoying that were the most likely to get stuck into your head. Like, you know, it's never songs that I love to get stuck in my head.
But you're not alone in thinking that. People often think that it's only annoying songs that are most likely to get stuck in your head. But Jacobowski, the gal who we chatted about earlier, said that the survey results suggested that only about a third of earworms are unpleasant, which is really, really interesting. However, those times when YMCA ends up on mental repeat may simply be more memorable than the times when a favourite song becomes an earworm. It tends to be a lot more of a bias that we have for towards remembering those negative experiences.
That makes sense. Like, you only really remember the unpleasant times. Like, what are the factors needed to get a song stuck in your head? Is when you place a song with a memory, like, do you remember the night out? Like, I remember I had my first gin and tonic with Superstition by Stevie Wonder playing in the background. So every time I, you know, have a little bit of gin, I'm always like, bam, 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 gin and tonic into my face.
Gas, like, gas.
Is it something like that?
It's actually a lot simpler than that. Like it or not, the brain hangs onto just recent and more frequently heard songs. A 2013 study in the journal Psychology of Music, for example, found that the more familiar the song, the more likely it was to become an earworm. Participants didn't have to think too hard about the music to get it stuck in their heads, as anyone who has started humming along to, you know, a song that you hear on the radio or in a grocery store can probably attest. The researchers found that asking study participants questions about the songs to make them process the music more deeply didn't affect the chance of the music getting into a full earworm on them.
So it's not a deep memory rooted reason, but simply like when you hear the song a lot and it just gets drummed in. Yeah?
Yeah.
I assume it also has to be a song that you can actually sing or hum along to.
So studies suggest that the easier a song was to sing, the more likely it was to get stuck in people's heads.
Kind of like Let It Go from Frozen. Like, that was genuinely stuck in every single person in the world's head for a couple of months.
Absolutely. And kind of like going back pre-Frozen era, based on studies conducted between 2010 and 2013, compared earworms to similarly popular songs that were now cited as earworms. So the study found that Lady Gaga was quite the earworm generator.
Really?
With Bad Romance, Alejandro and Poker Face all making the top 10 lists of those songs that frequently got stuck in people's heads. And that is an updated list of top 10 earworms
really?
That you can find online.
To be fair, she has some bangers. Do you remember? I've totally forgot about that Alejandro song.
Alejandro.
Yeah, that's pretty much...
Alejandro. Alejandro.
Alejandro.
At least that's taken over.
But, like, fair play to Lady Gaga. Like, that's witchcraft-level kind of songwriting.
It is,
isn't it?
So, these sticky songs had faster tempos than non-earworm songs. Earworms were also likely to share pitch patterns that are common in Western music, particularly opening riffs that start out rising and then fall in pitch. So, examples include, like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star are more modern tunes like Maroon 5's Earworm, that is, Moves Like Jagger.
So, like, instead, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da up and down, and Moves Like Jagger goes do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, so that is kind of a common thread amongst earworms.
So, but is there a reason that the brain does this? Like, on In the Shower, we like to get to the source, and most of the time we found that if the body reacts in a certain way to a stimulus, it's for a good reason. So why do songs get stuck in our head? Like, what is the reason?
It's not totally clear what's going on in the brain during earworm episodes, but a 2005 paper published in the journal Nature found that the auditory cortex, the part of the temporal lobe that processes sound, was involuntarily activated when participants listened to familiar songs in which a section was muted. So in other words, simply put, the brain was compelled to fill in the blank, essentially, in the missing music. The researchers could even tell the difference between the auditory cortex filling in lyrics, in which case specific auditory association areas that are key to interpreting sound became active, or imagining instruments, in which case more primary, basic sound processing areas were at play.
And most important question, is there any trick to getting rid of earworms?
Because earworms are involuntary, it's tricky to get rid of them on purpose. It's kind of like trying to get rid of hiccups on purpose. You can't just like think them away. For researchers asked kind of a dozen people to record their earworm episodes in a diary and found that the more people tried to consciously get rid of an earworm, the longer the song remained stuck in their head.
Oh no.
The process of thinking about an earworm to attempt to banish it likely just keeps the tune fresh in the mind. However, they added that it might be that the stickiest, most annoying songs are the ones that people attempt to get rid of the most, and that's kind of why we hate earworms so much, and that those songs are somehow less amenable to banishment than are the ones that people happily kind of go on humming. So that's kind of why we would always associate annoying songs with songs that get stuck in your head, because they're harder to get rid of because you're constantly thinking of them to try to get rid of them, but you may be blissfully unaware of just humming along to a song that you actually enjoy.
So you're best off just trying not to think about the song, right?
Yeah.
It's easier said than done, isn't it?
Life is an endless summer.
Oh, John Gibbons, if you're listening to this, you are the devil.
In the show with Des and Marcus, 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 in the show with Des and Marcus.
Well, there you have it, Shannon. That is why songs get stuck into your head, why an earworm can infect your ear canal, and why actually trying to get rid of it will make it stay even longer.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Share with Taz and Marcus. We really, really appreciate you dedicating your ears to us for the last 15 or so minutes.
If you have a question, if you're a curious cat and you want to ask us something to solve in our wonderful shower cubicle, it couldn't be easier. All you need to do is shoot a message to us on Facebook. Just search for In the Share with Taz and Marcus. Or you can get us on Instagram at In the Share Pod. Or
if you want to send a question or just say hi to our email address, we are at InTheShowerPodcast@gmail.com.
Also, we do accept notes, love letters, life advice, Bitcoin transactions, and pictures of pets.
Please keep them coming.
Please. The one that we get the most of is pictures of pets.
Yes, please.
Anyway.
Next week's question.
Next week's question comes from Cora Viv Katie on Instagram.
What does Cora Viv Katie want to know, Marcus?
She's actually asked us a really interesting question and very topical. Is veganism actually the best diet for the planet?
That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower.
But in the meantime, keep scrubbing!
In the shower with Des and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Des and Marcus.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio. Free radio.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour Canada report recorded on Friday, April 23rd, 2021. I'm Marc Boulanger. In the report this week, the billions in tax revenue multinationals are stealing. The need for paid sick days in Ontario. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
So close your eyes. Now, you have someone to call to.
This is Radio Labour. For decades, multinational corporations have been able to shift profits to lower taxing countries, resulting in governments around the world losing about $600 billion a year in tax revenue. But efforts to tax the foreign profits of these corporations are intensifying. For example, the Biden administration in the United States has recently proposed a corporate minimum tax rate of 21%. To find out more about the proposal, I talked to Toby Sanger. Mr. Sanger is the executive director of Canadians for Tax Fairness. I asked him why demands for a global corporate minimum tax rate are increasing.
Well, this is a part of Biden's Made in America tax plan, which is actually really quite ambitious. We've had this massive problem in which the large multinationals around the world, American, Canadian, European, have been able to get away with paying extremely low rates of corporate tax internationally. They've been able to take advantage of profit and tax shifting and tax havens to reduce their tax rates to less than 10% in many instances. For instance, the Silicon Six, Global, Facebook, Amazon, and others, pay an estimated approximately 8% tax on their corporate profits globally. That's about a third of what the effective tax rate should be across those jurisdictions. So what we've had over a number of years, decades, is large multinational global corporations being able to especially take advantage of tax havens to reduce their taxes. This means less money for governments worldwide, in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, around the world, and particularly for lower-income countries. But it's also led to increasing corporate concentration. So these companies have become more and more powerful, more and more concentrated. Smaller businesses and domestic manufacturers have suffered. It's led to offshoring in a whole lot of different countries. It's effectively increased the power of capital and also reduced the power of labor. Companies like Walmart, Uber, and others are especially able to take advantage of this. And so they have really edged out the competition, which often pays fairer wages. And so this is really important for labor. Now, just to be clear, the 21% global minimum corporate tax rate proposed is for the foreign earnings of U.S.-based multinationals. And this is all connected to discussions, negotiations that have been taking place through the OECD, that's the Rich Countries Club, basically, but they've opened their doors to some extent to countries around the world on what they call base erosion profit shifting. So there's been pretty intense discussions about reforming the international corporate tax system, which the former head of the IMF said a couple of years ago was broken. Some of these corporations have got hundreds of subsidiaries. Most of them are empty shell corporations, and they ship their profits all around the world. I think most people are aware of this. The extent of it is massive. I mean, the IMF estimated that close to 40% of foreign direct investment overseas is basically phantom investments in shell corporations. And the IMF also estimated that governments around the world lose about $600 billion in revenues because of this corporate tax shifting.
How much money would Canada gain?
Estimates are that Canada would gain a minimum $11 billion from a global corporate tax rate at 20%, and it could be up to about $20 billion.
Because of the incompetence of the Doug Ford government in Ontario, the province is facing a third wave of COVID-19 infections. Unions are calling for workers to have paid sick leave in an effort to stop people from going to work when ill. Jerry Diaz is the president of Unifor, the largest private sector union in the country.
We all need to start to listen to the doctors and to the health professionals. And what are they all asking for and what are they all saying? They're saying that we need to provide paid sick days in order to prevent people from going to work while they're sick. Who's all saying this? The Ontario Medical Association, the Ontario Hospital Association, the Association of Local Public Health Agencies. And who are they? They are the 34 senior medical officers in this province. Municipal councils and, of course, boards of health right across this province. The Ontario government is refusing to legislate paid sick days. And they're saying that if you push for paid sick days, that somehow you are playing politics. So do we really believe that all of the medical officers and the health professionals across this province are playing politics? To say that, frankly, is irresponsible and absurd. As a result of the stalemate between the medical professionals in this province and the government, We commissioned a poll with Echoes Polling, Echoes Research, one of the most respected polling companies in this country. So what did we find? We found what we all know, except for the Ontario government. That's the overwhelming majority of Ontario residents support paid sick days, more than 4-1. Ontarian residents understand there's a strong link between not providing paid sick days that will keep sick workers at home and the spread of COVID-19. Matter of fact, it's 63% of Ontario's belief that not providing paid sick days is leading to the spread. Of over the 80% of Ontarians that support paid sick days, that also includes workers that vote for all political parties. That includes Ontario residents that vote Liberal, NDP, and of course, Conservatives. So the question now becomes, who is playing politics? Is it all of the medical professionals across this province? Is it the residents of Ontario that vote Liberal, NDP, and Conservatives? Are we all playing politics? Or is it the province of Ontario that's playing politics? So the question that we have to ask ourselves, are the medical professionals and the residents of Ontario all wrong? And Premier Doug Ford and his cabinet are all right? I think we all know the answer. The reluctance of the government to provide paid sick days is strictly political. I say that because during the last provincial election, the government ran on a platform of killing Bill 148. What was included? 2 paid sick days, 10 emergency non-paid days, and of course, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The reluctance, I will argue, of the government to implement paid sick days in their mind would almost be an admission that they were wrong. But the only thing that's wrong today is to know that we are facing a monumental task with citizens dying and refusing to implement the paid sick days, which we know will help.
Here with his report about union events is Labour Star correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Some of the big stories in our Canadian news pages this week included the threat of a national shipping industry shutdown by the Seafarers International Union as it tries to gain attention to the plight of ship crews on all three coasts. We also covered a call by the Canadian Federation of Musicians for COVID-19 benefits to be adjusted to take its members' situations into account, and of course, reactions to the federal and British Columbia budgets. Canadian labor history items on our site for this week included the 1956 founding convention of the Canadian Labor Congress, a merger of the Trades and Labor Congress and the Canadian Congress of Labor. 1,600 delegates called for a national health plan, full employment, and a guaranteed annual wage. And this week in 1974, there was an illegal walkout by CUPW that in 7 days won equal pay for women postal clerks. On our Working Women page this week were stories about McDonald's reaction to claims of sexual harassment and gender-based violence in virtually every country where it has a restaurant, and the hotel workers in Burnaby who were locked out when Unite Here complained about mass firings earlier in the week. Canadian content on our Global Health and Safety Newswire included coverage of the tepid reactions unions have had to the news that workplaces in parts of Ontario that have C-19 outbreaks will be closed. UFCW, for one, thinks the measures are too little, too late. We also carried stories from across the country in which transit unions like Unifor and ATU were pushing for priority access to vaccinations for public transport workers. And we had a pretty horrific story about how and why the Alberta government is ignoring meatpacking workers despite the huge number of infections in those workplaces. UFCW members found out on Wednesday that despite their workplaces accounting for almost one-third of all the province's positive test results, the workplace vaccination program agreed to by UFCW and their employers has been cancelled and the doses are being directed elsewhere. These are workplaces that have already experienced the deaths of several workers. A majority of workers on the floors in these plants are migrants. Globally, the big stories we covered included the sentencing of a Hong Kong trade union leader to prison, more calls from unions for national governments to act against the military regime in Myanmar, and a rally in Bangladesh in which five workers died after the police opened fire on them. Their crime? Demanding unpaid wages. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here from the Labor CD, Fallen Heroes, Songs for Essential Workers, is A Nurse's Lullaby.
Close your eyes, time to sleep now. You have someone to call to. The pain is gone, it will keep now. And nurse to care for you. The ward is still, no one walking, no more tests to get through. Lights are low, no one talking, just a patient. Nurse to care for you. May no one die till tomorrow. No doctor paid, no alarms to leave the family with no sorrow. Just a patient. For you. So close your eyes, time to sleep now. You have someone to call to. Pain is gone, it will keep now. For a patient and nurse to care for you. Just a patient and nurse to care for you.
And that's it. Labor news you can use. You can find our international features and daily newscasts at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about solidarity.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, on CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or worldwide at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Hundreds of demonstrators took to the streets of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, Monday for a fifth day to protest last week's police killing of Andrew Brown Jr., a 42-year-old Black father. On Monday, authorities allowed Brown's family and attorney to watch a 20-second video clip of the shooting. The family says it shows Andrew Brown was shot in the back of the head while his hands were on the steering wheel of a car. This is Brown family attorney Chantel Cherry Lassiter.
Andrew had his hands on his steering wheel. He was not reaching for anything. He wasn't touching anything. He wasn't throwing anything around. He had his hands firmly on the steering wheel. They run up to his vehicle shooting. He still stood there, sat there in his vehicle with his hands on the steering wheel while being shot at. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.